Happy New Year. And we could perhaps use some. 2020 begins with the prospect of an historic impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate and ended yesterday, 2019 did, with throat-catching images of an attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, a country where so much blood and treasure has been spent. We're going to be talking about the impossible impeachment trial elsewhere in the program, but let's start by broadening out the lens to global security. In Baghdad today, American troops fired tear gas at hundreds of Iranian-backed militiamen and other protesters who gathered outside the U.S. embassy for a second day. They are angry about U.S. airstrikes last weekend in Iraq and Syria that killed more than two dozen Iraqi fighters in these Iranian-backed militias. The U.S. says the airstrikes were in retaliation for an attack last week that killed an American contractor in Iraq. There are also some new ominous words from North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, speaking to a meeting of Communist Party leaders yesterday. He warned of unspecified, shocking action over stalled nuclear talks with the U.S. President Trump responded at a New Year's Eve celebration at Mar-a-Lago last night.
He likes me. I like him. We get along. He's representing his country. I'm representing my country. We have to do what we have to do. But he did sign a contract. He did sign an agreement talking about denuclearization, and that was signed, number one sentence, denuclearization. That was done in Singapore, and I think he's a man of his word, so we're going to find out. But
let's bring in Jim Walsh, here now, security analyst with MIT Security Studies Program. He's here in the studio with us, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It certainly looks like it's going to come in with a bang, so to speak.
Well, and they all do lately, don't they? Go in and out. But the comments from the president remind me of how this year started with that meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
You know, the past year started. Your thoughts on hearing the president with the same kind of language that he's been applauded for from his backers who say, yeah, talk to him like, you know, guy to guy.
Right.
And others who say, you cannot talk to the leader of Kim Jong of North Korea as if he's your pal.
Yeah. Well, I think we can separate these two things out. I've been a supporter of diplomacy with North Korea. I welcome the president's initiative when this all began way back when in Singapore. It's sort of come off the rails, but I certainly agree with critics who say, you know, Kim Jong-un is not going to make decisions based on whether he's a pal with someone or not. Mm. He's using the leverage he has to try to get what he wants out of the president. My suspicion is that North Korea feels like it has some leverage, that it can cause some mischief in an election year, and that might force Trump to, make some concessions. I wonder, though, if the North Koreans are not have maybe an exaggerated sense of their leverage here. But that's where we're at. Loyal Here and Now listeners will remember that a month ago we talked
about
North Korea.
They're all loyal. They're all loyal.
Of course they are. Well, the new ones, you know, they'll remember that we talked about this. And we said a month ago, something's going to happen. We're going to have a missile launch. Maybe it's a satellite launch. Maybe it's an ICBM test. Maybe it's a nuclear test. But something's going to happen. And lo and behold, 30 days later, whatever it's been, all the signs are in that direction.
And so with his new comments, how do you interpret them? What do you think it might be?
I think the smart money right now is on a satellite launch. What I expect is the following. There's going to be a series of provocations. You start on the lowest rung first, and then you move up. So the lowest rung would be North Korea claiming that it is sending a satellite into space and using a rocket very similar but not exactly the same as an intercontinental ballistic missile to do that. Now, they're not supposed to do that. They know it would be provocative, but that's the first rung. The second rung after that in terms of escalation is firing a military missile, you know, testing an ICBM, firing something near Japan. The third is a nuclear test, and then I don't think it would ever get to this point, but it is certainly possible the final and most serious provocation, if we continue down this route, would be an above-ground nuclear test or an above-ocean nuclear test.
Well, and, you know, of course, people on the west coast of the United States are also worried that Kim Jong-un might want to demonstrate the distance that he can go with a missile. But, you know, talk about where we are. The nuclear talks with him have stalled.
Yes.
The idea that President Trump said he said denuclearization, I don't think a lot of people thought that was imminent. And he wants the U.S. to lift economic sanctions. Economic sanctions play out in a lot of our, global relations. The Trump administration, they're not likely to do that unless there's denuclearization. So we're caught in this web here. Where do you think the negotiating can be?
Well, here, let's start with the big picture. I actually think that both sides want to get something done. So in that big speech that Kim gave yesterday, or today by, you know, time difference, he left open the door for diplomacy. And he hasn't pulled the trigger on the most provocative things. And if he starts low and moves up the ladder of provocation, that is also an indicator he's trying to push Trump to get a deal that's more favorable to him. I think what we have is a situation where North Korea sees Mr. Trump as weak. They're trying to squeeze as much as they can to get something. They probably feel that they can get a better deal with him than his successor if he is not reelected. But they also don't want to push this to the point where it sort of spins out of control. So I think we'll see continued provocations that are measured still with the open possibility of negotiation. And I think, you know, I've been predicting a third summit or whatever number we're on now. We may very well get that. But it will have to be a thing where all the agreements are made up front.
Okay.
He can't afford to fail. Neither side can afford to show up like they did in Hanoi and have the thing blow up on them.
Yeah. Let's turn to Baghdad, which of necessity means to Iran as well.
Yes. Parallel
stories at this point. The Pentagon now sending more Marines to the Middle East in response to the protests there, the attack on the American embassy, getting through at least one door and into the reception area, really frightening, reminds us of Iran 40 years ago and the storming of the embassy there in which hostages were taken. This all traces back to, you know, the reason that President Trump pulled out of the nuclear deal is that he and his aides who felt that Iran... It's not that they weren't abiding by the nuclear deal. They were.
Correct.
But the thinking was that they were backing militias in the area, Hezbollah groups in the area. Now the president and the Pentagon feel that this was such a group that killed this American contractor that led to the airstrikes.
Yes.
Here's Ryan Crocker, the former U.S. ambassador to Iraq, on Morning Edition today.
I don't think there is any question at all. Kataib Hezbollah is well known to us. You know, they didn't materialize yesterday. They have been a long-term Iranian proxy in Iraq, so the Iranian hand here is not really concealed.
So they're saying that these are Iranian-backed militias made up of Iraqis that killed this American contractor. No question that it's Iraq it's Iran in Iraq.
I would say that's probably right. I mean, I don't have the smoking gun, but that sounds right to me. Let me make two points. One, I can't help but point out that when the nuclear agreement was enforced, there were no attacks on U.S. embassies by Iran or Iran proxies. The president pulled out of that deal promising we're going to get tough in Iran and Iran's going to back down. The opposite has occurred. We have more provocations, more problems now with Iran than we did during the agreement. So that didn't work out at all as predicted.
Well,
I just
want to jump in. Hold your thought.
Yes.
Barbara Slavin, director of the Future of Iran Initiative, said the same thing yesterday. She said this is more broadly about American foreign policy. Let's listen.
You know, U.S. policy, it's like we don't see around the corners anymore. And it's really shocking that the United States would put its diplomats in this kind of jeopardy.
In other words, she drew the line also from breaking the nuclear deal and not understanding that that might drive, different people into the arms of different people. And here we are.
Yes. Well, obviously, if you're going to try to choke a country to death, they're going to kick back. And
with
that's
the
what
sanctions,
we see.
The economic sanctions.
Yes, the sanctions. So we've seen this in a variety of ways. Attack on Saudi Arabian's oil fields, the drones, you know, lots of different things. Not surprising. It's surprising that we weren't prepared for it. I would have thought that we might have anticipated it. But I'm going to say something that other people aren't saying. I'm going to offer a different point of view very quickly. And that is, I think this is mostly political theater. I don't think the Iranian militias, if they're at the direction of Iran, are looking to escalate so that there is a conflict. And I don't think the U.S. And the president, despite his constant bluster, is looking for a fight with Iran. So I think this is sort of political theater at a tactical level. In Iraq, the center of gravity, you know, people don't like Iran and Iraq, and Iraqis don't like the U.S. particularly, but the center of gravity is this big political social movement in Iraq, all the protests. That's what's really driving Iraqi attitudes and Iraqi behavior, while the sideshow is the U.S. and Iran duking it out at a low level that both sides hope won't escalate, but tries to make the other look bad as each tries to put pressure on the other.
Okay. Well, hopefully, you know, no one accidentally shoots someone.
Exactly. I mean, that's the risk, is you get inadvertent escalation.
We have a minute left. What are we not paying attention to that we should more in 2020?
Well, 2020, I'll certainly be looking at India and India's relationship with Pakistan. The Indian leader, Mr. Modi, apparently feels like he can act with impunity and do whatever he wants, and he's getting pushback at home. And there may be tensions with Pakistan as a result. I think also in China, you know, where is Hong Kong going? What is happening with the Uyghurs? There's a lot going on at a moment when perhaps Chinese economic growth may be hitting a bit of a decline. And then finally, I would say, and I just thought about this morning, you know, imagine if you're in a you wake up, you know, in your home and you're of the Muslim faith and you look around the world and the Chinese are imprisoning Muslims. And all around the world, they are under the gun. And I think that's something to watch.
And shadow foreign policies. Jim Walsh, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.